Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Counting on their defense and relying on their offense, and especially and now a Jaden Daniels. And how I look at it is this. When I order something from Amazon, I don't rely on it to show up. If it says it's going to be there Friday evening, I count on it to show up. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm counting on is the Commanders now, is I'm counting on the defense to actually carry us. I think it's good for the Commanders to pick up a Von Miller. He's a stout player.
That's Rashad Jennings on Von. Is he trying to make a difference between relying on versus counting on? I don't know. Anyway, quick stat on Von for you. Joe, Sneaky Joe, had this. He's not here today. Jeremy and Joe, just me today. Josh Schmidt producing. Owen Parker here as well. I might have called him Owen Power earlier today. That was a mistake. Happens. I got a day of the week clock. I need a which Owen is over there clock. It's pretty much the same one. It's always Owen Parker. Anyway, talked a little about Von Miller today, looking back on his Bills obituary to a point. It ended. I thought bringing him back on a modest deal might have made sense, moving cap money around and bringing him back. And Joe had this, it kind of popped up in my feed, that last year in pass rush win rate, Von was eighth in the NFL. And all right, pass rush win rate. What's that? That's how often you beat your blocker, the player that's blocking you, in 2.5 seconds or less. That's what pass rush win rate is. And the reason to value that instead of sacks is simply, well, if you're rushing Daniel Jones versus Josh Allen, your likelihood of getting the quarterback on the ground is different. But did you beat your man? So Von finished eighth in pass rush win rate last year, behind only Aiden Hutchinson, Myles Garrett, Micah Parsons, Nick Bosa, Trey Hendrickson, Jared Verse, and Chop Robinson. Dolphins rookie Chop Robinson. He might be the only one on the list who's saying, oh, interesting. The rest of those guys, like, that's a murderer's row of great pass rushers. And Von was used sparingly. You know, he had a limited role for the Bills. When they put him out situationally, he would beat his guy. That's it. Speed rush beats his guy in less than 2.5 seconds. So the Commanders take a little bit of a guess here. We haven't seen numbers on the deal. One thing that'll be interesting to me is that, because this time of year, if a guy's not on a team, this went for Von, it goes for Amari Cooper and Rasul Douglas, former Bills out there. Are they asking for too much? Is there just nothing out there for them? And we'll see what Von ultimately gets. I've not seen the numbers on that deal yet, but he goes to Washington. Anyway, seems like a good bet for them. So do you think it was a good bet? Good gamble, took a shot, 803-0550, 75% voting in a Twitter poll right now. Should the Bills be scared off that kind of move, or do you think it was worth a shot? 75% said, worth a try, would do it again. And I just got a response from Adam who tweeted, didn't learn anything, we now currently have a Bosa on the injury shelf, not as old by any means. I don't see the Joey Bosa thing. I know they play the same position. He's 30, so he's younger. I guess there are parallels. I don't think the Bosa thing is anything close to the Von thing. Bosa is a one-year deal. The cap hit is low. There's dead cap because of void years, whatever. The cap hit is low. The expectation for Bosa is much less than it is for Von. Von coming in was Hall of Famer, still getting after it. It's a risk because he's old. Bosa is, he is hurt all the time. He's frequently hurt and frequently battling something. And because of that, that's why he was $12 million instead of $120 million. I mean, it feels like it's pretty easy to say the difference in them was that one contract, at least on the reported total value, was literally 10 times bigger. So I think it's a tough sell to try and tell me that the Bosa signing is proof that they wouldn't be scared off, or that they didn't learn a lesson they should have about injuries. I don't know. The most exciting to me is totally fine. If it doesn't work out, what were you going to do with that money? What other pass rusher are you going to get for that money? You take a chance. Sometimes you kind of just do that. You can't go get Max Crosby. He didn't move. TJ Watt didn't move yet. Hendrickson yet. Miles Garrett didn't move. If you wanted the best pass rusher you could, I guess you could have gone for Josh Sweat in free agency. Other than that, I feel like it's a low risk, high reward. It's gambling season. And shouldn't the Bills be in the market of some gamble? Shouldn't you buy some scratch-off tickets? You've got such a good foundation and a good deep team. I'd be willing to do the scratch-off ticket. I'd also be willing to pay for the big investment in a Vaughn player again. Or that could be a receiver next year. It can be a, I don't know what else it would be. Offensive line is set. You're not going to pay big money for a tight end. You've got tight ends. Your quarterback's set. Your running back conversation on James Cook is right there if they want to pay big for him. I don't know that they will. So they've spent on defense. I feel like they'll gamble again on defense. If Bosa doesn't work out this time next year, maybe they're after Trey Hendrickson if he is a UFA. And he'd be 32. So I know they play the same position. I know injury is there in both of their cases. High profile, great player at the top of their game. Yes, that compares, but it does not strike me that the Bosa signing is of the same kind of, the same category as the Vaughn signing. One was the biggest guy on the market, and arguably, when's the next time the Bills will spend $120 million in free agency on one guy? When will that happen? And it's a good bet for the bet board. I'll run that by Joe. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Open Championship is running. Scotty Scheffler out there, -2 right now. He's on the 11th hole. Scheffler is 2 back of the lead. One thing about the Open Championship, it's really good for it's vest season. Rainy, a little windy, a little cold. You're getting good vests. Scotty's wearing a vest. Long sleeves, vest, muted colors. This is not the tournament where you get your golf. Well, I shouldn't say that. Jason Day's wearing something interesting today. But something happened to Rahm on the course just a minute ago I wanted to get to. Because for you golfers out there, we've got our little things we steal from the pros and rules that we maybe fudge a little bit. I hope everyone's familiar with the gallery rule. You hit a ball, it doesn't go out of play, it goes in the rough, you can't find it. You kind of all agree, just put one down. Don't take a penalty. If there were a gallery here, they'd point to where your ball is. You know, the gallery rule. So something happened to Rahm a minute ago, and we've never talked about this on the air. What is the ruling when this happens to you? And Joe had a story about this as well. So Rahm's hitting, and apparently something happens during his swing.
Once find the left rough.
Really? Whistling? Right, great time.
Whistling. I'm not impressed with somebody behind him. Finds the right rough.
He says, whistling? Really? Great time. Somebody whistled in his backswing, and he hit the ball in the rough. Now, there's nothing that anybody does about that. The golfer gets mad. There's no, you don't get a re-hit. Joe was telling a story off the air, I think, playing the other day, maybe playing in his club's tournament, that somebody fired a firework in his backswing or whatever. When you guys play, if something happens during a backswing, somebody blares a car horn because you're by a road, somebody talks, something, the cart backfires, you guys have any sort of you get to hit it again? Because I've never known anybody to do that.
Not a hit it again, really. I will blame it on that, but then I'll go play the shot.
Haven't you offered somebody the chance? I'm sorry, I was talking. If you want to take another, you've offered that.
Always, I've done that before. Yeah.
What percentage of golfers take that?
I don't know that I've ever 1% up on that.
Yeah, like maybe 2% of people.
Yeah,
I've seen people like almost like, you know, when they're in their backswing and they're swinging, they get startled by something and almost fall over, and they're like, "No, I'll just go play it." And it's like, right. "Dude, you almost fell over. Go hit it again." No, oh, no, no, no. I'll no, just
you
go play it.
You can't. You can't. I don't think you can hit it again if you fell. If you fall, you fall.
Yeah, I know. I'm just. I'm talking about a
distraction.
Right.
No. I'm saying like I saw someone like get startled by something.
Oh, okay.
Where they like kind of like jumped a
like
little.
Like an air horn goes off and they fell.
Right.
Right. Right.
Oh, you know what? I might want to give. I might want to give a ruling there.
Like
if a gunshot goes off at close range and you literally.
Yeah, you like jump a little bit.
I don't know why there's gunshots on this golf course that I'm in my head.
I was the third party there, and I was just like, dude, like hit the ball again. And he's like, no, I'll go play it. It's fine. And I'm like, okay.
Wasn't there a guy on like 18 this year in a PGA Tour event, like hitting a wedge on 18 to make the cut? And I think like an air horn for like weather went off as he went down. Is that right? And he got kind of screwed on that?
I think the thing that screwed him, though, was the shot doesn't count.
Right.
So, yeah, he's in his swing. And like, it wasn't that it was distracting. It was that this shot doesn't count.
Right. And then, like, what do you do there? I guess you'd rather not have the shot count if the thing goes off in the middle of your backswing. But
unless the ball goes in the hole or something.
Right. That would
be unfortunate.
Yeah, I've never... It's very rare that I ever get anybody to take me up on any kind of...
Oh, sorry.
I was talking. Retroactive gimmies is another one of those where it's like.
That's tough. That is.
You know, somebody misses a little too far.
Oh, you're going to give me that? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that was good, I guess. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Those can be tough.
I wish subscribe to team no gimmies.
I think I'd like to
get in that. In groups like that. Once you start saying, like, oh, that's good. Like, you know.
Okay.
Because people give them, I say this myself as well, you give them hoping someone will give one to you.
Right.
And it's...
That's gross.
It's a bad habit.
It feels gross.
It's a bad habit.
Yeah. When you play with me and Bulldog, we very rarely... Gimme's got to be within a foot for us, basically.
Yeah, anybody that does the length of the putter, like, that's nuts.
Yeah.
You have come on. If you're giving the length of the putter, I promise you have not seen me putt, because I can miss from
right. Or inside. You've never putt from there, because all you've ever done is take
tap
those
in.
Away.
Right. 803-0550, our phone number. Jerry Ostrowski, Big Jerry O coming up, top of the hour. Talk a little Bills with him ahead of training camp. Talking lots about Vaughn today and, his next stop. Washington onto another competitor or contender. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us here on WGR.
When you watch them, they're extremely disciplined. The fundamentals are there, and they always, I think, play almost, I wouldn't say above their talent level, but he gets the most out of the players he has on his roster. You see also the development of players who were drafted outside of the first round, really talented guys that Brandon Bean has managed to find later. But I do think Sean McDermott, given that that's his side of the ball, deserves a lot of credit for that.
ESPN's Mina Kimes on One Bills Live earlier this week. I don't dispute any of that. May it not happen, but I'm on record as this is the last year I can take this same season again. Where, for all his merits, when I get, and as challenging as this particular task is, if I get to January and I can't stop anybody, what are we going to do about it? I'm drafting defense like crazy and investing in it like crazy. Certainly no lack of effort has been made on that front. They're going out and getting as much talent as they can. This year, I mean, it was absolutely about that. In the offseason, maybe it won't happen. When I kind of was kidding with Tyler Dunn, he mentioned Patrick Mahomes throwing an interception in the playoffs against the Bills. It's true that he never has. 131 attempts in four playoff games, 9 touchdowns, no picks for Mahomes. He had a fumble in this last game, if I recall correctly. They've just got to figure out, I mean, to be a little bit harsh, what is the coach's job? I mean, that's what needs to happen one of these years in the playoffs for me to feel. I think I've had enough of this. repeating itself. And last year, I did not feel this way. For this whole time, I've been very much in the camp of, man, it'd be incredible to make a change with the success that they have. Who would even think of it, right? I mean, I've just been more incredulous to the idea. But last year, you had it all set up. You got Baltimore at home and won, thanks to their turnovers. You won that game, Denver first and then Baltimore. Cakewalk through the division. You clinched the division literally on December 1st, I believe. I mean, just after that, all you're here for is to game plan for Kansas City. Like, that's what there is. And, I mean, not all, but a lot of it, you have the freedom to do that and to rest guys. You know, you could have played that a little bit differently. Teams rarely do. Still, whatever it means, you gotta get there. And last year was the test. I'll say this about myself. As somebody that's felt more incredulous to the idea, as I've said, of a coaching change here, well, a year ago, if I had thought, maybe we did have this hypothetical. We do a lot of that kind of stuff. The Chiefs have a terrible season offensively, no explosive plays, they can't score, they're averaging, you know, what, low 20s, whatever it is, and you get to that playoff game again, and they light you up, what then? Somebody could have thought, maybe someone did, someone could have thought to ask that hypothetical question a year ago to someone like me, who has been like, you know, just, I don't know when I'm ever going to want to do this. I'm not sure I ever will. I have a tough time thinking I'm going to go 13-4 every year and win the division, you know, going on near record streak and like want to make that kind of move. But okay. All right, tough guy. Let's say you have another great season and you go to Arrowhead and the Chiefs kind of stink offensively and they do it again to you. And you can't take the ball. You can't, well, they did have a turnover, but you can't pick Mahomes off. You can't get to him. You can't stop him. Then what? Well, you have a point. And that is what happened. Whether anybody thought to ask that question or not, doesn't matter. That is what happened. And it got me to a point where, like, I don't want to see that again. Enough already. You've got to get to the top with this guy, Allen. He's too good. And you should have years more time to try, but you got to get there one of these times. Mahomes isn't older than Allen is, much that matters, you know. Neither is Jackson. They're in your window. They're in your face for this whole era, probably. Burrow too. You got to figure out a way to stop him. Allen, in the playoffs, has been great, and it has not been enough. I don't subscribe to the, but they had the ball with 2 minutes to go, down three, bottom line for this team last year. I mean, it's true, but 32-29, I'm scoring touchdowns in the fourth quarter, taking the lead. I'm getting enough. Well, I guess I didn't. I should be getting enough from their offense to think this way. So I want to say both things here. I want to say, what are the odds that this all happens again, right? I mean, how many years in a row can the same kind of season play out? I don't know what the odds are, but what were they last year? They weren't so remote. What is the likeliest scenario this year in the AFC? It's probably that the Bills and the Chiefs meet in the playoffs again. Mix Baltimore in, sure, but there's a top three or a top one and then a next two in the AFC. It's an interesting time with how predictable the conference is, which is unusual, right? I mean, we think of the NFL as not being that way, but for the last few years, it's been very predictable. These three teams or these two teams have four times in 5 years they've met in the playoffs. That's kind of incredible. And You can't stop them. You haven't figured out a way to stop them yet. So, that's all. The topic was put on the table, right? The Mina Kimes clip about, you know, McDermott's strengths. I don't deny them. I just need to see that make the difference the way Kansas City's defense made the difference, critical moments in those games. That, or if that's not a little bit too cherry-picked, just the overall takeaways and stops and sacks, you know, everything you need to put on a good day defensively. 803-0550 for your calls. I'll look again after this break. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday.
It was very hot outside. It was very hot right away. It's beautiful, though.
Beautiful outside.
I'm gonna say something that like might irritate people.
It's the high today.
I'm a sicko. The high is too high.
87, at least it's what I've got.
Okay, that's still not that high, but also at the same time, can we stop?
Friday. Friday's your window. 77 and sunny is the high.
Okay, cool.
That's your window right there. That's pretty good.
Can we stop pretending that summer is the best season?
I'm not there yet. I'm still there.
Can we stop pretending?
I'm still there. I can't move off it. I'm still there. Can't do it.
And by we, I mean you are definitely the outsider of this workplace.
Yeah, I know. I'll fight that battle. That's fine.
You don't have to keep going. It's okay. Just join us.
It's elite though.
It's not.
You can go to the beach. It's always sunny.
It's not. And it's not always sunny, but this year it is.
So
it's
beautiful.
It's actually kind of oppressive.
A little bit. But we don't live in Florida or Vegas where you're like or Arizona where it's like, don't go outside. It's actually dangerous to go outside. We don't hit that all that much. Where there, it's for 3 months, don't go outside. We haven't hit that yet. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
That's exactly what you're helping my point.
No, you can go outside in Buffalo. In like where it's like deserts and you know near the equator.
Okay,
no, you can't.
Ready?
But it's the same with like.
But that's during this time, is it not?
Yeah, but in the
during this time.
But in the north, you can't go out during winter a lot of the time. So they're like, no, stay inside. It's too cold.
Well, yeah,
that's the climates.
I'm not saying winter's the best either. I'm not pretending.
I'm not pretending either. I like summer more. I don't like the cold at all. I can't stand it. I can do more in the summer. Speaking of the summer. What goes on every year, at least the last 5 years, has been Give 716 Day. That was started last night, 7:16 p.m., is continuing on today. And starting at 10 o'clock, one of our incentives is first 100 donors of $117.60 or more will get Bandits tickets. We'll have more giveaways throughout the morning as well. We'll be able to keep you up on. Sabres Go Ahead signed jersey. We're going to also have $15,000 to $25,000 matching donations throughout the afternoon. Plenty more along the way. But for right now, at the 10 o'clock hour until 11 o'clock, will be Bandits tickets to the first 100 donors of $117.60 or more. Again, we'll keep you up to date on all of that as we go throughout the day. But as of right now, over $705,000 has been raised. Again, we'll also keep you posted on that number as well. It started last night when I was on the nightcap. I think I left and we were around 200,000 or so.
Good Lord.
And then you know, people went to sleep. And then as we got up this morning, the number has absolutely gone up.
Oh, it's now actually 716. Mm-hmm. Now we'll step it up.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what it is.
Pretty much. Again, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We have exactly 1 week until training camp gets underway for the Bills. Rookies reported yesterday. And the one bit of news we did get was sort of surprising, or at least it was not the news I think anyone was expecting. Mm-hmm. I think most of us were waiting for any kind of update on the TJ Sanders situation. Where is he going to be in terms of his contract? Is he going to be holding out? Wide receiver Trey Harris for the Chargers. Instead, we got nothing on him, and the only news that came out was that third-round pick, Landon Jackson, has found himself on PUP list, the physically unable to perform list. Doesn't appear to be serious. Matt Parrino reported that a leak source told him the Bills are hopeful he'll be able to start practicing as early as the start of next week, so he may not even miss a single training camp practice with camp getting going exactly a week from today.
So possibly a cautionary transaction. Mm-hmm.
But it still doesn't look awesome. It does not look ideal for a guy that had no injuries
during mandatory minicamp, rookie minicamp, practice in full, no problem, to in 5-6 weeks pick something up enough to where they have to go the precautionary route.
Sometimes you go hard in training. I understand. I get it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it happens, and sometimes it's a freak injury. Remember Matt Milano tore his bicep tackling a tackling gun?
It looked completely routine.
Yeah. Like, freak things do happen. It's unfortunate, but, like, that's just something that happens. Freak things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And to answer your question, though, of, like, are you really, like, any sort of concerned?
Yeah, I threw that up on Twitter because we've got – Jackson's just the latest situation for the training camp D-line storyline. But we've also got suspensions. Hoyt and Ogunjobi, that's been since free agency.
Right.
The unsigned contracts, I've brought up TJ Sanders. You literally don't know where that's going to go.
Correct.
Because we're sort of in uncharted territory. And then injuries as well. We've mentioned Landon Jackson, but back during mandatory minicamp, Joey Bosa was revealed to have picked up an injury, a hamstring injury, also during kind of his own training.
And a player who is routinely on injured lists.
And that was, I mean, immediately. They signed him to a one-year deal. But the 1 year was always kind of like, how much are you actually going to get from him? The Chargers let him go because they weren't getting enough from him. So, yeah, for me, it's not the main story. But for me, at least, it's become a storyline of, all right, how concerned are you? A week before training camp,
it's enough that you wanted to ask a question.
Yeah, you know, albeit a week before training camp, are you nervous about the current situation with the defensive line? Because I think this is the most important group if the Bills are going to be a different team than years past. If they're going to make it past the Chiefs or, you know, a Bengals-Ravens team that maybe gets spry and gets to the conference championship divisional round, they have had a real issue in the playoffs specifically stopping teams from scoring. And a lot of that has been because their defensive line can't get home. They've done an incredible job at revamping the whole group. The only problem has been, again, a week before camp, a lot of them are unavailable or kind of hurt.
And it is not good to see immediately, but am I concerned? No, not at all, as a matter of fact, because I do think that the Sanders thing gets settled. I do think that the suspensions of Hoyt and Ogunjobi, they'll hurt for the 6 weeks that they're gone, but unless they somehow pick up an injury in the time that they're not playing games, which is more than a non-zero chance, let's be real. I wouldn't be that worried about it. I do think that, you know, the injuries, Bosa will concern me. It's going to be a thought in the back of my head throughout most of the years. Can you please just at least get through parts of the season and be available in December and January, please? But overall, no, I'm not worried. And I think the arrogance in me is going to say it's because the offense still has Josh Allen. Take that for what you will. A team that was, quote-unquote, retooling won 13 games last year. Could have won 14 if they actually had to try. I'm not worried for a second. And I do like the addition of Deion Walker in the fourth round to help out with this. And this is a big situation where if the second round holdouts continue across the league, Walker has an opportunity to really cement himself as like early in the rotation. Especially if his back is good. That is an athletic profile that you want. Along with that size, Walker could be downright scary. And if you can get that and take advantage of the situation, that eases any and all concerns that you may or may not have at this point. That's the beauty of it for me, is there's still always going to be someone that has a chance to take an opportunity. And while the depth at defensive end, for example, isn't the greatest with injuries to Jackson and Bosa, A.J. Epenesa is probably fighting for snaps. Take advantage of it.
Yeah, he's getting to that point, too.
Take advantage of it. You have this opportunity right here to re-cement yourself into the rotation. Javon Solomon, last year's fifth rounder.
Mm-hmm.
You have a chance to start stealing some snaps away. Because depending on how the rotation goes, if everyone's fully healthy and Hoyt comes back from suspension, one of those two is fighting for their jersey on game day. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're already in a fight. This is an opportunity for Epenesa and Solomon to take advantage. This is an opportunity for Walker to get into the rotation early. It's a chance for Dwayne Carter to prove himself from being last year's third-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about this is not only not concerning, it is opportunity. And that is the madness and the sicko mentality of training camp. We are indeed so back.
I think it might be, too, the way they've built the team, it's maybe the opposite, and some people will get frustrated by this, and I can understand it. This is maybe the opposite of what it was at the beginning of the season for the wide receivers.
Right.
Shakir went down, and they had nothing. And Shakir was a slot guy, but when Shakir was there, they were fine, they were humming, they were, you know, what have you. He goes down, and you saw how bad it got in the Houston game.
Mm-hmm.
That they had to go make a trade for an Amari Cooper. They had to go do that, or the offense was going to sputter out of control. They eventually make that move, and while Cooper's production doesn't lead to a lot, it allowed for the team to spread itself out on offense.
His presence did.
And they're able to continue to average 30 points for the rest of the year. It was great. What they've done now is they've added enough depth to where I think you can have that conversation and not be really worried at all, specifically for the defensive line, because there is so many options. We don't know how good some of them are. Sanders, Walker, even Javon Solomon is going into a second year. There are some unknowns, but there's at least enough bodies that you feel like, okay, we're in a good enough spot. That's why I think for a lot of people, too, are not even really worried about Hoyt and Ogunjobi definitively being out for the first six games. Because it'll be like, we're fine. Some of these younger guys will get snaps. And then Hoyt and Ogunjobi can kind of figure out their, you know, where they're at. They're going to be with the team for all of training camp. It's just once the season starts, they will then have to go away for the six games.
They have to miss six games.
So they'll be able to be with the team. It will get in the rotation, the whole thing. And really, I think this is where it gets down to an 803-0550, the number to call if you want to join the show, give your thoughts on this. I think Aaron Quinn of Cover One, who tweets in, kind of nails it for me, at least, mm-hmm. is that very little concern for me, not to put the cart before the horse, but be healthy in a full roster come late December. And that's what matters to me. And I think that's been true for most of us since the Hoyt Ogunjobi suspension announcement,
mm-hmm.
was, I don't really care.
Right.
Like you mentioned, we have Josh Allen. We'll be fine. We're going to win our games. We'll be just all right. I need them healthy at the end of the year, because whether we all like it or not, that has been one of the major struggles for the Bills come late in the year, is being healthy specifically on defense. Even last year, Elam has to start for you for most of the AFC Championship at corner, because Christian Benford gets a concussion very early in the game. They have just not been able to stay healthy, and they haven't, at some key spots, had enough depth to get through it. You have A.J. Klein chasing around Travis Kelce. They've gotten really lucky in injuries during the regular season. Those
right.
teams, for the most part, have been able to stay healthy at really crucial spots. They have not been healthy in the postseason, really, for a while here.
Yeah.
They have had a tough road with the postseason injuries.
And Joshua tweets in exactly that sentiment. Not worried at all. I'd be more worried if we were heading to the postseason looking at the current situation. But early in the season, I'm fine with it. Let's get it out of our system now so that it doesn't have to be an issue in the postseason like we always deal with.
Yeah.
And luck does have something to play into this. And I do think that there is something, for example, that luck is not on their side. With the example of Sanders, for both player and team, you are dealing with something unprecedented right now, which is almost all of an entire round's worth of picks are not signed.
Yeah. Yeah.
How am I really going to blame a player for that when there are 30 of you? It's not personal. And the team, can I blame them for not wanting to step out of order? I can be more prone to that than I am to blame a player. And I do think that eventually Buffalo might be one of those teams that steps over the line. I really do believe that. The Bills might be that team to go, no, we're done with this.
I think Hard Knocks will play a big role in that.
Hard Knocks might play a role in that, but I also think it just has to do with, this is a championship window.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to have the rest of you messing with me. Get out of my way.
For ultimately, which will be haggling over a few thousand dollars in a few years. It's not –
Yeah.
We've mentioned it. It's not a ton of money, and it's spread out through 4 years. The total number will be around 11 point something million.
And for billionaire owners, it's not a dent. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's, especially within the NFL, where that revenue is replenished almost immediately through TV contracts and ticket sales and everything of the like.
Yeah, you'll be okay.
You'll be fine if you have to pay a second round or a fully guaranteed contract. And that's why I think the Bills will be the team to step over the line. I don't know if they're next, but I do believe in them doing it.
Mm.
But I see opportunity for other players, most importantly, at this point. Because that's what training camp is all about. It's about fighting for spots. It's about fighting for reps. It's about the competition. It's about fighting with each other, quite literally, sometimes with fisticuffs.
Oh, those are the best parts of camp.
Love that. It's the tenacity. It's the jam.
See, I just kind of like it when it happens and like you have like that split of like, is this a good or bad thing for the team that they're fighting?
And I think that's the only time I'm able to quote the coach from Letterkenny.
There you go.
On air, safely. Look at the tenacity. The jam.
I got to watch Letterkenny. But I've never seen it.
But to get back on into a serious point on this is every year, there is opportunity for a player that you are not building stock on to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, it looks like to start training camp, that opportunity shines on the biggest black eye from the Bills' last playoff game, the defensive line, which is the position that they addressed the most. And now you're looking at a player maybe like a Deion Walker, who might have been a little bit under the radar, suddenly can put himself seriously in contention for a top rotation spot right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of luck and being given the chance based on circumstance. Ogunjobi's going to be suspended for 6 games. So guess what? Later in the preseason, you're going to rotate that player out of reps, because he's not going to be ready for you on day one. Because he can't be. He's not allowed to be. So at some point, you got to start giving reps to guys that are going to be there for week one against Baltimore. Get ahead of it. TJ Sanders is dealing with this holdout thing with the second rounders. Your draft class competition that was drafted ahead of you is not going to be there possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Take advantage of it.
Yeah. 803-0550, again, the number to call if you want to join the show. Let's take a call here before we wrap up our first segment. Julian on the line first. Julian, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, what's going on, Phillips? Happy 716 day.
Happy 716 day.
Good, good, good. I want to talk about Joey Bosa. I know we got rid of Von Miller and got Joey Bosa, but will he actually be better? Will he give us more? I don't know. We already got him with his injury. We're going to see how serious that is, but I don't know. I'm questionable. I don't know how much more he can give us. Obviously, I'm hoping for the best, but we will see. I did want to talk about James Cook, but I'm going to stay on defense. We have a solid defense. We have a lot of guys, but no stars mm-hmm. on defense. I forgot who was talking about, but I remember watching our show, and they were talking about who's one of the best. Straight ahead. It was talking about who is one of the better or best defensive players on those defense. Matt Milano, Trey White, however, whichever. But with those guys being mentioned, I mean, they went through injuries. Who's going to step up this year to change the model of bend, don't break, where we're a solidified mm-hmm. defense? Yeah, when we play a lesser team where bend, don't break, you have everything within the 20s, you're lucky to get three, we get turnovers, fumbles. But when we play those playoff teams, those high-caliber teams, we bend or we break more than we bend, and we can't get stops. You guys said it earlier in the show. So my question pretty much is, who do you think will really step out? Is it Benford, one of the safeties, one of the rookies? Would it be Maxwell? I don't know. I just feel like the only way we can get over the hump is if coaching can take the next level up, or if the defense, somebody or everybody, takes the next step so we can get past the Chiefs or whatever perennial team so we can get what we want, and that's the Super Bowl. But enough of that. Love you guys. Happy 716 day. Go Bills.
Thank you, Julian. And I think I heard you helping
giving
someone
directions.
Out. Yeah, you're helping someone out. Like that's the spirit of the day too. So
talking Bills, giving that. Directions at the same time.
Love that. That's a great live shot right there. But yeah, that's the thing, is that there's opportunity though. I'm not as concerned.
Yeah, I've been on this point though for a little while. There's no real star power on the defense, I guess. Like,
right, it's something we've been on.
It's been a lot of guys. I think there are a few, though, on the defense that if they're given better talent around them, could break out. Benford's 1A. He, I think, is already one of the elite corners in football. If he has a better number two next to him, Rasul Douglas had a rough year last year. He was getting caught up a lot. And I think that caused Benford to kind of just be ignored because target Rasul or get to Elam. Mm-hmm. You know, when Elam all of a sudden was filling in, he would go after him constantly.
Right.
I mean, there really was no easy second option. Now they've brought back Trey White. We'll see what he's going to look like. He was much better in Baltimore than he was with the Rams as he slowly was starting to heal, but we don't really know where that's going to go. They obviously spend their first-round pick on Max Hairston. They've also gone back to the well the later round, maybe the most pro-ready corner they could get later in the round in Dorian Strong.
Also, they're going to have options there. Hancock, who can play corner.
They've gone options there. I think you could maybe get a better season, you know, already very good season, but an even better statistical season out of Benford if all of a sudden the number two corner spot isn't the easy button where it's like, we're going to avoid that guy. Everything's going to kind of go around the second options. We feel better attacking those. If you've got a better option on defense to defend that, I think Benford could see a bump up. I've mentioned Ed Oliver and Rousseau maybe both having those pop years because of the defensive line and the reformation of it. But to be fair, they do go down a little bit for me just right now because we really don't know what the defensive line actually is going to give us with everything going on.
And welcome back to an original conversation we had about the draft. Remember the beef wagon, Zach?
Yeah, that was a big part of it.
Beef wagon. Guess what the Buffalo Bills did with their fourth round pick? They took certified grade A beef in Deion Walker. Exactly the type of prototypical defensive tackle that we were looking for of big dude, absorb blockers, free Ed Oliver. Right?
Really what a big part of it was.
Walker has a chance now to fulfill the prophecy that we were talking about in March.
Mm-hmm.
Get it done.
But I think it is going to come down to some of these guys who have been here for a little while and are good players,
mm-hmm.
but many of us believe there is greatness in them. Rousseau has been one of the better edge-setting, run-defending edges in the game. He just happened to maybe have his worst game against Kansas City in the AFC Championship.
And you know
what? Ed Oliver is one of the better pass-rushing D-tackles, but he is inconsistent and often does rely on a space eater to really allow him to breathe, allow him to really produce. You mentioned it. Like, they bring in Deion Walker. Even T.J. Sanders is a bigger guy. They're able to get those players in. Now it becomes more about consistency, and it does become like you had in Miller a few years ago. I don't think that's going to be Bosa's mm-hmm. role, by the way, to Julian's question there. I think Bosa's more just going to be he's there on third down, pass rushing specialist. We'll see what he can give us. But I think that's going to be where you're going to have to see these guys become more consistent and to be maybe not the all-pro players. I'm not asking for somebody to all of a sudden become Zach Bond, where he's barely known and then he gets to the Eagles and boom, he's an all-pro player and he's one of the best off-ball linebackers in football. I'm not asking for that. But you do have to start getting bigger. It can't just be, come the end of the season, the only players that NFL fans know on the Bills are Josh Allen and Deion Dawkins. It cannot be that again. Your quarterback is willing you to 13 wins. You got to have some other people help out a little bit to become named guys in the NFL because they're finishing games. They're making the big plays in the big moments. And right now it does kind of feel like it's really only Allen.
And I do think there is a position that we could talk about that is suddenly looked at as a potential strength in terms of its depth compared to where it was a couple years ago. And we'll do that coming up here after the break, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones, right here on 716 Day on WGR.
What's the saying, right church, wrong pew? I'm sure you've heard that. I do think Saban to the NFL makes sense, but remember what happened in Miami. He wanted Drew Brees. He had Drew Brees locked in, and the doctors didn't clear Brees, so he had to settle for Culpepper, got the hell out of town. Quarterback matters for Saban. Colin, unless they go 3-14 and can get Arch Manning, I don't think the Dak Prescott gets Saban to the Cowboys. But I think the team to watch would be the Buffalo Bills. If they slip up in the postseason, they are favorites. And they want to run out McDermott. Saban plus Josh Allen in Buffalo? Well, getting the Bills finally that Super Bowl that's been elusive?
I mean, man, wow. We've had a segment on the show called Worst Take. That's got to be, it's going to be the worst take of the year. It's going to be, it's Jason McIntyre, who occasionally appears with Cowherd, who is, I'm personally, I feel like that guy's on a DiMaggio-esque streak of terrible takes, but that is an all-time, okay, yeah. The Bills, look for the Bills to hire Nick Saban. All right, happy Friday. It's the second straight hour we've had where, like, smelling salts. What? What's that? Start of the show had, I forgot even what it was, but something. Oh, yeah. No, it was that. That's right. It was the same thing. It was a listener alerting me to this, the existence of this tape. Look for Nick. Look for the Bills. Watch the Bills for Nick Saban. Yeah. Right. Nick Saban. Nick Saban, who certainly would what? Garner a lot of interest in the NFL? Are we even sure of that? Why? Wow. I mean, I don't have a long list of names and who it might be and what would happen if the Bills did not win the Super Bowl. Of course, like, how it all happens would matter, and that's impossible to know right now. But the idea that they would fire Sean McDermott and bring in Nick Saban, I don't know what to tell you. I almost want to say I can't think of seven people less likely to get that job than Nick Saban. Absolute nuts. Absolute nuts. Jason McIntyre with Colin Cowherd. And then, Josh, you said Cowherd kind of agreed in his answer?
Yeah, he was, because they were talking about, you know, if Saban does come to the NFL, he's going to want to go to a team that either has an established quarterback or can draft
sure.
a superstar like Arch Manning.
Just like every single coaching candidate. Just like if Joe Brady gets a job next year, he's going to want a good quarterback or an avenue to draft a good one. So, like, that's not even unique. He's a coach, and Cowherd said, yeah?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which great quarterback, if you want to lump them all, which quarterback is most likely to have a coaching change? Let's do it that way. If you were to bet which one is the next one to have a coaching change, who is it? Mahomes? Is it Mahomes because Andy Reid's going to retire? Is Josh Allen, he's certainly not the favorite for this. Lamar? John Harbaugh? Not going to be, is it Burrow? And Zach Taylor? Is it Herbert? If you're trying to handicap this, which of the great quarterbacks is the most likely to experience a coaching change? It's not an easy question. It would have to be a coach that's not safe or something goes so terribly wrong. I almost want to remove Andy Reid retiring as the favorite because that feels like cheating. Just kind of spinning through the league here of the guys that are good and who it might be.
My head keeps going to Lamar with Harbaugh and like if they have more playoff issues, but they are so good that it feels
he won a Super Bowl,
right? And like, they're good and really good and they've have been good. It's the same as the Bills essentially.
They've changed their coordinator, Harbaugh. If that were to happen, and Harbaugh were to get, I mean, I just think it's kind of nuts. They've been the one seed recently and lost at home in the playoffs. They lost here. That's the thing about once you are a coach that wins a Super Bowl, you are a made man. They lose in the playoffs here, and I don't know how much Harbaugh took for that, how much heat Harbaugh took. Lamar had a couple turnovers, and Mark Andrews dropped the ball.
Like, right.
What's the coach supposed to do?
Exactly.
Lamar put it on the ground. Lamar threw it to Taylor Rapp.
It might just be Bengals because they're so poorly run that
maybe
they could make a decision like that. I think Zach Taylor's probably pretty good, but I think that they are volatile enough
sure.
to have something like that happen.
There's a piece up at NFL.com that lists the Bengals as the team under the second most pressure in the NFL. So it's a piece up at NFL.com about which teams face the most pressure, and it's from Tom Blair at NFL.com. And the Bengals come in at number two. Because it's 2 years missing the playoffs with Joe Burrow. One of those, he gets hurt. Last year, they started 4-8. They nearly got to the playoffs with a deadweight defense, he writes. Okay, I'll buy that there's pressure on Cincinnati to get something done here with Burrow and Chase and Higgins. But you know, other than that, is Dak Prescott's got a first-year coach who's probably not that safe. I mean, the other contenders, teams are under pressure. Tua's not moving the needle there. Caleb Williams just got a new coach. He's a young guy. Man, Nick Saban. What a concept. What a crazy idea. Anyway, good morning. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 if you want to join us. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. No Joe today. He's off. He'll be back on Monday. Chris Trapasso joins me in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll talk plenty of training camp issues and Bills preview stuff coming up at 8 o'clock. I tweeted out a question. I kind of asked this before the break, and I wonder where people land on this, because I'll tell you what I hope happens, and that's, what is the best case scenario for what happens with James Cook and the Bills from here? What would you label? Would you lay it out for me at 803-0550? I hope it goes like this, and then, you know, wherever you ultimately get to. If it's up to me, I think the best case scenario for Cook, and, you know, contract stuff, I don't know the number they're willing to go to. I don't know the number he's willing to come down to. While social media can read $15 million per year, okay, that could be easily 4 years, $60 million, when it's really only 3 years, $32 million. You know, that's how these contracts work. So I don't want to get too bogged down by the numbers of what it might be. But my best case for James Cook is that he does exactly what he just did, because there seems to be a belief that it's going to come back to earth, that he'll have touchdown regression, and there's a strong case for that. I understand the fantasy football community is very bullish on regression and guys not getting the same number of touchdowns that they do if they break off a lot of big runs, but Cook is a little unique. He is different from a lot of other backs. He's not a big back. He's not a guy that's getting a huge workload. Ty Johnson and Ray Davis exist. But, you know, if we want to think about the running backs the way that we might think about receivers, I'm kind of moving Cook over to when the Bills had a number one receiver and complementary pieces. One of the things that I think was a problem for the Bills was raising the complementary pieces – like Gabe Davis, into too large of a role and noticing like, oh, that's a problem. And I don't know about Ray Davis as a full-time starter. We saw 1 year of him, and that looked pretty good. You could save a lot of money by not paying running backs. There's no doubt about that if you decide to be a team that never pays running back. I don't know if the Bills are a team that never pays. They could announce Cook to an extension today for 12, and I would think, all right, good, that's fine. I am totally on board with the idea of a dynamic playmaker in their offense coming back. It's a team that, you know, builds completely around Josh Allen. We know that. And the belief around this offense seems to be that nobody else needs to be elite at what they do. And Cook is not an elite running back. He's just one of these, I don't know, second-tier guys. Coaches and executives ranked him number 8 in the league. All right. And Jeremy Fowler's rankings. I think he's good. I like to point out again and again and again that his yards over expectation is near the top with a lot of really good running backs, with a lot of other guys that you would think, oh, that I'd like to have that guy on my team. He's right next to Jahmyr Gibbs. He's right next to Bucky Irving. I mean, he's not quite Derrick Henry, but it's pretty good. And yards before contact, yards after contact. Like Cook delivers. There's a long time held belief that as long as your line is good, your running backs will be good. And that's true. The line, to me, what the line does is raises your floor on how good your running back can be. If you put a guy back there that can't pick the hole the right way, can't bounce off contact, can't make guys miss, then you don't have as high of a ceiling. But we talked earlier in the week with Ben Gretsch, who has a site, Stealing Signals. It's his Substack, Stealing Signals. He kind of, you know, digs in a lot of the data, was talking to us about the Bills and their new identity. Their identity is that they are a running football team. Their pass rate over expectation, how often they pass the ball versus run the ball. They've become a running team and a super efficient offense. And one of the reasons they're able to get away with that is that Cook has been awesome for them. Cook has been awesome, and yet every time it came up this offseason to talk about what he should do, there were plenty of fans that were ready to just like throw him out, kick him to the curbs, trade him, see what you can trade him for, and then draft a young guy. And I get there's a case to make it at running back there, but I think he's good. I think he's valuable. And especially on a team that is going to kind of underplay their skill positions to some degree, I've got a dynamic back that yards over expectation and breaking long runs. And once he gets to a certain level, like that's a touchdown. That is tremendous value to me. Sometimes yards over expectation can be, I don't know, deceiving, because if you, you break a 20-yard run for a touchdown, your yards over expectation is capped at 20. If you were 80 yards back, would you have taken it 80? Maybe in the case of Cook, yeah. He ran away from guys. He made huge plays for them. His touchdown number last year, if they don't have that, what does the offense look like? Does it look the same with Ray Davis? We might find out. But then there's the part about what does he really want? And how much is this almost like, if I can cross over to the Sabres here, Bo Byram. The Sabres and Byram, he wants a bigger role. And they paid him on a two-year contract, and he wants a bigger role. He believes he can do more. And if you're asking for that, yeah, you're asking for more money. But Cook might be kind of asking for an actual promotion here. If he goes to them and says, all right, I want to make sure I commit more to XYZ. I want to be on the field more. I want to show you I can do the things you think I can't do. I'm going to improve. I'm going to dedicate myself to that. This season's been about Dalton Kincaid and Keon Coleman, right? They're focusing up. They're in the weight room. They're showing that they can raise their game. If Cook came to them and said, I'm going to do that because I'm going to prove to you I should be on the field more, there's a debate as to whether or not they would even want him to do that. You're fine. You're fine. We don't want you to get too tired. I know you want more snaps. I know you want to maybe be a full three-down back, but we're comfortable with where we are. Ty Johnson and Ray Davis, we've got a good thing going here, and there's no doubt about that. They've got a good thing going. Like, their backs, what they've got in their backs, 1, 2, 3, is as good as anybody in the league. But you're only as good as anybody in the league when you're at the top, when the top guy is as good as Cook. Once it goes Davis, Johnson, and then, it's third-round draft pick or whatever they decide to spend, I think it gets different. So I'm on board with Cook. My best-case scenario is they sign him to, I don't know, like 12. And all the stuff about 15 mil, I don't know, it looks like 15, but it's not. I'd like Cook to stay. I think he's good. I appreciated McDermott raving about him, raving about the look in his eye in the AFC Championship game. I appreciate that in that game, he made great plays. Without him in that game, they might not be even in it. We're sitting here talking about how it's the defense. James Cook in that game had a couple of really important plays, key plays, fourth down conversions, yards over expectation. Like he was really important for them. And that's the biggest game of the year. And while there's going to be a lot of math to try and figure out, like, well, where can I save? Where can I do this? Where can I do that? I really do think that part of what the Bills are doing, this kind of gets back to the signing of Vaughn 3 years ago. Why'd they do that? Sure, they did it because in the regular season, they knew they'd reap benefits from him being a great player. But the idea was, when we get that guy on the field in the important game in the AFC Championship or divisional round, he's going to make a game-changing play. It's also the way we talk about Joey Bosa right now. Laying out the best-case scenario for Bosa, I posted a Twitter poll, would you take 8 sacks and healthy for the postseason? Because the 8 sacks kind of don't mean much. What means a lot is an 8-sack guy being healthy for the postseason. If I told you Bosa had 2 sacks this year, how many wins the Bills get? Oh, 15. If he had 8 sacks, how many wins the Bills get? 15. But we just kind of live in that world where one game against Kansas City, or maybe it's against Baltimore again, or whoever it is. But who's going to produce in the moment that you need that? In the moment you need that. And Cook did that for them. So I want to continue to place value on him and continue to think that he is important. My best case scenario is we kind of get surprised And just before camp, yeah, we came to terms on a deal. We liked it. We think this guy is one of the better, more dynamic backs in the league explosively, and we're going to keep him. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 if you want to chime in on this. We'll get you some of our responses, some tweets. Bob writes in. I recently saw someone in Fantasyland drum up a scenario. He gets traded to Washington for McLaurin. I'll go with that as best case scenario. All right, well, you know, that might be a little tough. Scooter, best case scenario. He has a good year to help us win the Super Bowl. No, not allowed. Not allowed to say the Super Bowl. I got to get somebody with a real one here. Best case, he becomes undeniably the Bills' best running back in the league for a Super Bowl champion. You know, you guys are cheating. You know, I actually thought I could beat everybody to the Super Bowl by saying, what's the best case? This is how the poll reads. And I wrote this so people would not write, he wins them the Super Bowl. Because, of course, we won the Super Bowl. I wrote on the poll. See, I've done this long enough. I know you guys. What's the best case scenario for how things play out with James Cook between today and the end of the regular season? I wrote that clumsy line so people wouldn't say he leads them to the Super Bowl. People are still doing it.
People still, they got the Super Bowl on.
I know.
Jared.
Trust me.
What do we want?
I know.
People?
So do I.
Yeah, I mean, me too.
I just wanted to say, like, hey, can we just not say he wins the Super Bowl? Like, what do you want to happen here? Oh, I'd love to win the Super Bowl. Sure, right.
Okay.
Best case scenario is he gets traded to the Rams and the Bills win the Super Bowl. Yeah, all right, sure, right.
Sounds good.
Anything with the Super Bowl is the best case scenario. We know that.
Right. To me, with Cook, it's so – that room is so solid, and I often find myself getting caught up in, oh, it's a great room, they'll be fine. And I think you made a good point there. They are so good because they've got such a variance and because Cook is so good. Like, he makes that room, really. If they had an average lead back and then Ray Davis and Ty Johnson, I don't think we talk about the Bills' run game the way we talk about it now.
We might not, but you know what people would say? Well, they'll just win 15 games with Josh Allen anyway.
Right.
Like, we do kind of live in that world where no matter what, it's in Allen we trust, and Allen will deliver for them.
Yeah, I operate under the sort of I almost have to take Allen out of my mind in every conversation I have about this team because I think he is just an equalizer that can almost erase any other mistake that you make.
Right, he covers up an awful
and
lot.
And so I always try to almost just remove him from the equation and say and look at the team separate from him. Because we know they'll be great. We know it's going to go pretty much awesome when he's playing quarterback for them. What's going on around it? Like, who's the roster? All the rest of it is what I always try to just separate the two. And I think that's probably a healthy exercise because if you do this stuff and you think about it, you'll always come back to just, well, it'll be fine. I got Josh. It's right. Fine. But you don't want to just bank on that.
No, I think that's not the way.
Like, that's not healthy, and that's not a good way to win. You might win doing that because he's so great that he'll make up for it, but I don't think that you should be operating under that assumption. And so I struggle with, to me, the best case scenario for Cook, without saying they find somebody to replace and do exactly what he does, is just, he play this year out, and he's essentially replicates what he did last year. We know he probably won't have the same touchdown metrics, but
I think he could. I think he could.
I think that'll be.
Aren't they going to run it a million times again?
I think probably, but I think they might throw it more than they have.
I mean, I feel like they're going to stick with what works. Bean's entire attitude about his offense is, why would we change anything? It worked.
Then, of course,
they changed out a couple receivers and probably upgrade in that spot. But otherwise, like, why change anything?
Right. Change because you have to because everybody else is trying to catch up.
If their defense, and there's also this, if their defense is better, that's one thing. That's one thing you wonder. If their defense is better, would they have more runs because they feel like, oh, we're just going to, you know,
doesn't matter,
boa constrictor teams to submission? Or would they feel like they can get a little looser and pass the ball and try and end games in second quarters?
Right.
Something to track.
I think there's, yeah, there's so many different ways that it could go for them. And but to me, just to get back to the Cook point, I think it's play it out, have him do what he does. He's going to be awesome, I think. He's almost, barring an injury, I think he'll do great. And if he wants to let you pay him a decent number that you're not going to get hurt by, do it.
Yep.
And otherwise, I think those guys are out there to find in the draft. Mostly some free agents once in a while will pop up that are legit enough to be worth a contract.
And that's something, you know, if we're looking at past results, that's something the Bills are very willing to do is draft running backs.
Exactly.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Jeremy and Joe, no Joe today. He's Owen Parker. Josh Schmidt is here as well. Josh has lost the website that tells you how many people have the same names as you.
I didn't lose it. It broke.
Are you sure you didn't dream it?
I'm positive. I'm looking.
It has to be considered possible now.
There are other people online that are also saying, man, I miss this website. This website was great. It was such a good site.
How many of those people have the same name as you?
Probably none of them, judging by their
You're telling
names.
Me there are people online?
Yes. You can look. It's
telling
called
you,
howmanyofme.com. If you type it into your search bar, it won't go to a website. And I looked it up, and apparently the website crashed in like 2023, and no one fixed it. So it's just sitting out there broken, and no one will fix it.
Howmanyofme.com.
That website, me and my friends, for some reason, used to just look up our names in like third grade and be like, oh, look, there's this many of me.
Let's do some website nostalgia. What's the website, keep it clean, you used to go to a lot? Like Homestar Runner, wasn't that one of them?
I will say,
hotornot.com.
I just went to howmany-ofme.com, typed my name in, and got a number.
All right.
I wasn't doing the dash. Maybe that was
a dash.
That's all I'm saying is I've got 423 Owen Parkers.
Okay, how many of the rest of us? All the way, how many of me websites are there?
That's
going to find that one out,
an
too.
Even better question.
How many Josh Schmitz? How many Jeremy Whites? How many we got? You said how many Owen Parkers?
453.
Okay, so Owen's got the lead at 453.
Jeremy White, 338.
Okay.
And let's get Josh.
I know I'm not number one. I've got a shot at number two, maybe. I'm a top
Josh player. Schmidt, 477.
Oh, Josh wins. There you go.
Do I win? I'm the least unique now, then.
Yeah.
You're the most unique because you got less of you.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. I win. How about Joe DiBiase? We'll do it. He's not here.
That's gonna be.
Could you find a name? That's one. It's like
it's got to be one.
There's
there,
one.
Right? Only 117.
All
Joe
right,
DiBiase.
Joe's unique. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Robert McIntyre, Bobby Mack putting for birdie, and just missing on this one. All right. Let's just say this is a Bobby McIntyre show for the Open Championship. He's been tapping in for birds. I mean, this guy's on it right now. 3 strokes off the lead. Did I see? Was this the Højgaard all of a sudden? Wait, hole out or something? Ian Harmon? I can't see anymore. Are they minus six?
Harmon, yeah, minus Højgaard, six for the leaders.
All right.
I also didn't realize there are 2 Højgaards.
Oh, yeah?
That's Rasmus, and then there's Nikolai.
Rasmus. The Sabres should get him to bang the drum before a game. We've had a lot of Rasmuses over the years. Let's get Rasmus Højgaard in town. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to give us a ring. The Open Championship underway and leaderboard starting to see some scores go low. If the conditions stay like this, Scotty Scheffler's going to shoot like a 64. Let me tell you that right now. Going 7 under. It's a par 71 course. You can give us a ring. Chris Trapasso joins us top of the hour. And we're hanging out here on a Friday, getting ready for Bills Camp, which starts next week on WGR.
After an off-season-long standoff, a mini-camp holdout, T.J. Watt, as expected, not going anywhere. The sides agreeing on a 3-year, $123 million contract extension that locks up Watt through 2028 and makes him not only now the highest-paid non-quarterback in NFL history at $41 million per year, it is also the second-largest contract ever in Steelers history behind, oh yeah, DK Metcalf.
Tom Pelissero. Well, the Steelers, I think, are kind of a joke. But give them credit for one thing. They're not middling it. They couldn't really have done much better than Aaron Rodgers. I think the only guy maybe available that they would have had access to that would be a better bet for this year than Aaron Rodgers is Justin Fields, who they benched last year when they were winning. Like they didn't want Justin Fields back. So that wasn't going to happen. And even, you know, that itself is obviously debatable whether he's an upgrade. I mean, Rodgers is Rodgers. Like that could still work out. And making the Jalen Ramsey trade and then, you know, Metcalf, they got rid of Pickens because they didn't like him. It wasn't about rebuilding. They just didn't like him. And, you know, now this, TJ Watt, you can't go half measure with this kind of strategy this offseason and not pay TJ Watt. Everybody says the same thing. It would have been cheaper to do this earlier. That's, of course, true. But sometimes, you know, you just don't. And what do you do about it? You pay the extra. You pay the tax for waiting. And that's what Dallas will have to do with Micah Parsons. That's what Cincinnati quintessentially will have to do if they don't trade Trey Hendrickson. So, you know, the Steelers could have done worse here, I think. And they're probably decent, right? I mean, aren't they always? Can you picture a bad Steelers season? We did just have a bad Aaron Rodgers Jets season, but the Steelers are not the Jets. I'm not a culture guy, but I do believe that there are edges in coaching that are sometimes even like behind the scenes, and Mike Tomlin must have that down because on the field, you know, strategy stuff, he's terrible, but they do figure out how to win 9 or 10 games every year with bad quarterback play and, you know, bad game day decisions. They manage. There's a mystique. And the Jets are the opposite. The Jets are a franchise that for so long has not had that, like kind of like forever, the Jets, since Namath, maybe, with a couple of brief exceptions. Longest playoff drought in the league is the Jets, AFC East. Longest drought without a playoff win is Miami. 2000 season, 25 years ago, is Miami's last playoff win. Do you remember? Can you recall a Miami Dolphins playoff victory? I watched it. I remember where I was. Lamar Smith was the star of this game, an overtime win over Indianapolis and a young Peyton Manning back in the 2000 playoffs. Welcome back. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off again today. She'll be back with me on Monday. He's around. You might run into him. 803-0550 is the number. I feel strangely good today. Did I need to stay up past midnight watching a 3-part series called Amy Bradley is Missing on Netflix? No. And I'm watching it thinking this is going to be a problem tomorrow. I'm up too late. I'm drinking while I'm watching this show. Family's out of town. Really don't need to be doing this, but I'm doing it. And yet, today I feel all right, so who knows? I don't find there to be much useful correlation in like my behavior the previous night or in the morning and then the show that day. It's not always how it's supposed to go. Go to bed early, get up early, walk, get your steps in, walk the dog, eat an apple, get to work, preparing, writing down ideas. Anyway, today so far so good. I might be jinxing it right now. That golf course is gorgeous, and I wish I were there. I mean, Glen Oak is also, I don't mean Glen Oak. Glen Oak is very nice. I'm talking about this Royal Portrush. And the weather changes have added to how spectacular the place looks. I mean, you have the downpour doesn't help it at all, but the views out on the ocean from the edges of that golf course are just amazing. I mean, a Lynx golf course on TV is always very pretty, in its own way, like the style of the course and everything like that. But that ocean view right there in the, at the top of Northern Ireland is really, really great. I think also, without even maybe you don't realize, but networks just get better at offering you that. Just views, more cameras, drones even, like just more ways of being able to, well, paint the picture, so to speak. So I've really enjoyed these last 2 days. Family away, so I might be lucky enough to watch a lot of it tomorrow and Sunday. Tyler Dunn is coming up at 5. We'll talk about his essay on Dalton Kincaid, his time spent with him. Tyler is the best at these long-form pieces, a lot of which are profiles on players. And this Kincaid piece he wrote is really kind of a, I think to anybody who doesn't subscribe to Tyler's site, golongtd.com, it's kind of a pump-up piece for Bills fans on this player. And you might need it, right? you might need to be pumped up on Dalton Kincaid right now, or Keon Coleman. I mean, Tyler has written about him too. I mean, we've spent so much time on receivers and camp hasn't even started yet. We'll see what we get once the players are on the field next week, starting on Wednesday. Not as much maybe as on James Cook, or about as much. I've spent plenty of time on Cook this week. No developments that I know of. Here's one thing I think that is kind of like a conclusion almost as we get to camp and we'll see if anything changes on that front. I think this is one where both sides, the player and the team, should want the same thing. And that often does not happen in these kinds of things. And when it doesn't happen, you know, it can get really tricky. I don't know if I'm right in saying that. I'm saying they should. Cook and the Bills should want the same thing. You know, I'm thinking more of the Sabres for this, but the Sabres often are in these kind of predicaments where the player kind of has them. We know you're weak. I'm good. If you want me, you're going to have to pay the tax. Again, I'll say it the same way as they did about the Steelers. You're going to have to pay extra to keep me on this team. And then they're at a position of weakness and where the player's supposed market value might be one thing, to sign here, it's more. That might be Alex Tuck right now. They're going to have to pay him into his 30s and worth a lot of money to get him to stay, because what if they don't? But I think, so there's a lot of those kinds of negotiations. I think with Cook, he and the Bills should want the same thing. They both should want about a 3-year contract in the $9 million range. Too much more than that, in my opinion, is not reasonable. And I don't agree that the Bills should just let him play out his deal. I think that's risky. So he's good. He's valuable to them. They never miss a chance to tell you how much they love him. Okay, this should be easy. You should want the same thing here. And that is part of why I find the whole thing kind of baffling, why it isn't somewhere new yet. Here's Pete next. Hi, Pete.
Yeah, I had a comment, but I just had a question about something you just said. Why do you think it's risky for Cook to play out the last year on his contract?
I think it's risky for the Bills because this is not necessarily fair to him, but I'd worry about motivation a little bit, you know, and just having it be a distraction, like they would say, that kind of thing. Just do what they always do with these guys who are 1 year away. Just sign them.
Yeah, and I guess the flip side of that is there should be a motivation for him to perform as good as he possibly can to cash in. Yeah. But, you know, who knows how it plays out.
That's right.
But anyway, the reason why I called is I think you mentioned Kincaid earlier. And, you know, I had high hopes for the guy. But, you know, as I've watched him over the last couple of years, I kind of fear that he's in, like, no man's land as far as, like, an athlete in pro football goes. I mean, he's not quite big and strong enough to be a traditional tight end, but he doesn't seem quite quick enough to be an effective slot receiver. I think Dean talked about him being essentially like almost a replacement for Cole Beasley. I mean, he's just not that. I think people in Buffalo appreciated Cole Beasley, but I think he was a really effective slot receiver. And Kincaid is just not that. And then the other piece is, it seems like part of his poor performance or at least lack of production, was due to some inaccurate passing from Allen. And I don't know if that's just what you get from Allen. So, like, Kincaid, maybe he would be a very good tight end for Matt Stafford or Joe Burrow, but maybe not for Josh Allen. Maybe he needs a quarterback that's going to put it right in a particular window, whereas a guy like Allen needs a receiver like a Beasley or a Diggs, one of those guys that just gets tremendous amount of separation. And I just don't think Kincaid has that.
Yeah, you make some good points. I wondered about that last point, if it was maybe on Kincaid last year that, you know, the ball, Allen's usually pretty good at putting the ball where it needs to be. And if they're a little bit off with one guy, why? So I don't know. Injuries were talked about last year too. Yeah, I think the overall point about his athletic profile has kind of always been there as a point to make. He was never going to play with his hand down. Like, they didn't draft him for that. You don't draft a first round tight end for that ever. Like, this was going to have to be a big play seam stretcher type. And it has not happened. Some of that is the Bills have reined him in earlier on in his career, a little bit last year too. But yeah, I kind of agree. I think he's, and all that being said, Shakir is their slot receiver. Like, where is Kincaid's path to having a good season? Like, what does it look like? It's got to be touchdowns, I think. And if you get him, you're fine. That's not seam stretcher, but if you get him, you're fine. But remember the year he was drafted, didn't work out at the combine. You know, he had only like a couple of big games in college. It was risky. He was not supposed to be the first tight end pick. Michael Mayer was. And then there was Laporta, who went in the second round and then had a huge year for Detroit. So overall, it's been a disappointment. But Tyler will join me. He just talked to Kincaid, and he might straighten us out here. Thanks, Pete. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
You got far away at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, because we're going back to the phones right now and to Kevin in Hamburg. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You bet. I want to ask you a question about the Hard Knocks thing for the training camp. Is that all right?
Okay, yeah.
Now, the first 3 or 4 days, will they be there those first 3 or 4 days, or will they start brass tacks on Monday? Because those first 3 or 4 days, you're getting accustomed to everything. You know, like when you used to go to school, like high school, and then the first 3 or 4 days, you're getting ready for your locker combination and all. You didn't want people in your face. You know, homework's never even that hard. You're just getting ready for the next Monday to start. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kevin, they're going to be there. They're going to be there. They're probably there now, waiting on these guys. They want to get all that on. They want to see the first days. They want to see guys learning their locker combinations.
Oh, okay. And then how long will it go to probably like the last game, include the last game, preseason game?
Yeah, I know the first episode is August 5th. So, you know, they'll use whatever they gather from the start of camp until then, you know, leave them enough time to edit it all down, and then get it up and running for August 5th for the debut episode. And it's once a week, right? So then they'll, you know, they'll have stuff for the following week. And, yeah, they'll plow right through the preseason, the whole thing.
They'll probably include the
cut down day, which is August 26th this year.
Probably go right into week one of the regular season. That'll be the final episode or something like that. So
that's how I would anticipate it going. But, yeah, they're going to gather as much as they can from the very start of that whole thing. So, yeah, they're not waiting until the following week. They're getting a head start on it, if anything, because they don't want to miss anything. That's what they paid all that money for. Let's go to Lewis in Rochester next. What's up, Lewis?
Hey, gentlemen. Great show as usual.
Thanks.
I got a question. When you said undisclosed injury for one of the Bills, aren't they supposed to disclose? Isn't that a requirement?
Well, not at this time of year. Not at this time of year. In the regular season, they absolutely do for the injury reports, but there are no injury reports this time of year. Now, I'm sure Coach McDermott, when he addresses the media next Wednesday, is going to be asked about it, and he'll probably tell everybody what it is. We just don't have that access right now, so we do not know the nature of Landon Jackson's injury that has him on active PUP.
Got it. One more comment I'd like to make. I'm curious if I believe that the Bills will make it to the Super Bowl. I'm not a Bills fan, but I believe they're going to make it this year as long as Allen stays healthy. But I hope and pray for Allen's new wife that nothing, you know, he doesn't take a step back, because if he does, some people are going to blame his getting married as far as taking him down. You know what I mean? They, you know how
yeah, I mean, that's kind of ridiculous, but.
It is ridiculous, but you know there's going to be some fans that are going to be, oh, man, if you wouldn't have got married, we'd be winning the Super Bowl right now. You know what I'm saying?
So yeah, yeah.
I don't think he will, but I'm just saying if he does, that yeah. is a possibility.
All right. Fair enough.
Thanks. Yep.
Thanks, Lewis. Yeah, I mean, look, I understand there are always people that want to look for scapegoats when things go wrong. But, boy, you're really taking a long walk on a short pier with that one. So,
yeah. Our friend of the show, Kyle Brandt, did an actual study on this. He went back and pulled out a bunch of examples of guys who got married early in their careers or at one point of their career after they'd been playing for a minute. Time and time again, the examples were that the guy had a career year right after he got married.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, everybody from George Kittle yeah. all the way down through everybody.
And I'm not here to get personal because that's, you know, that's Josh's yeah. personal business. But we have heard him say publicly that she is his biggest supporter. And I think there's that kind of step in your life. They call it settling down for a reason because you feel like everything's kind of settled and calmed down to a certain extent. Like, you know, you're wondering if you're going to have a life partner.
Well, yeah.
Now you got one. And it's like, okay.
Brownie and I were having marriage conversations today right before the show. It should help you because now you got somebody to help you with your own life and you can help somebody with theirs. That's the way it's supposed to work. So, yeah, usually you do get a bump. So, you know, what are you going to do? We'll see.
There's a bump.
But he's right. But the caller's right. Louis's right. Yes, in this day of social media and stuff, they blame everything except the truth.
It's like a knee-jerk reaction.
Yes, exactly.
It's got to be that person. They're responsible.
It's your fault. Yeah, that's it. You're right, but hopefully we won't have that conversation. Yeah. So.
Amen to that. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Those are the numbers to jump on board with us with any question you have on the Bills, the league, training camp coming up. Hard Knocks, we just took a question on. So, yeah, lay it on us if you got questions. Happy to answer those. Steve, I saw on NFL.com they listed the top 11 teams with the most pressure on them for 2025.
Yeah.
And they listed the Bills and the Ravens as tied for third. Now, looking at this list, there were differing versions of the kind of pressure they were describing. For example, Pittsburgh was first on the list, and the pressure described therein was they've been to the playoffs, but haven't won a playoff game in like 6-7 years. So there's pressure there, you know, and they're doing it with patchwork parts, you know, a declining Aaron Rodgers. Yes, they made the big trade for DK Metcalf, but they also threw George Pickens overboard. Najee Harris isn't there anymore. You know, they've had a lot of turnover. They get Jalen Ramsey, ship out Minkah Fitzpatrick. So they're doing a lot of changes on the fly, knowing they've got to do better than they have. So I get that pressure. The pressure that they describe for the Ravens and the Bills is obviously to vanquish the Patrick Mahomes Kansas City demon.
Right. Yeah.
So I guess from that standpoint, I understand, but I think we safely believe that the Ravens and Bills, barring some unforeseen circumstance in which half of their roster is injured, are going to be postseason competitors.
You're thinking those teams are going to have great. And here's
I was perplexed by the use of the word pressure, but I guess I get it.
When you get to the end of this, I told Brownie there's too many people in the media these days. But you get to the end of the season, and getting there all of a sudden becomes irrelevant. Now it's about that game. It's about that game. It's not about the pressure and all. It's all about last year and the last 6 years you've been at. No, it's about this game today. And last year doesn't have anything to do with it. The team 3 years ago where 80% of our roster was different and 30% of our coaching staff was different has nothing to do with today. That pressure that thing that happened, you know, like with Bills fans, wide right, that doesn't,
13 seconds, all of that stuff. The home run throwback, go through the list. None of it matters on that day. You got to play. You got to play well on that day.
Yep.
None of that pressure is relevant. That's not what it's about. When you get there, it's all that's ridiculous, and that means it's ridiculous now too. Yeah. None of that stuff. None of that stuff means anything, dude. Come on.
Maybe we got to wear our shirts again.
You got to play well on that day.
Yeah. And that's what it is. 803-0550. 1-888-550-2550. Those are the numbers to join us. Going to go back to the phones here. And joining us there is Tom on the west side. What do you got for us, Tom?
Hey, guys. I got to respond to Lewis. I mean, I don't blame myself for calling in the other day and saying that I thought the rookie that was going to exceed expectations would be Landon Jackson. And as soon as I said that, I find out he's going on the PUP list. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. You go out there, you say what you say, you believe what you believe. And that's why I was actually afraid to call in the rest of the week and give you my other players.
You thought you were the jinx.
I didn't want to go on the PUP list.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Talk about it.
Yeah, hopefully, funny, yeah. Hopefully you don't have to worry too much about it, Tom. Typically, the active PUP is for less serious injuries. For example, we saw Levi Onwuzurike of the Lions go on the reserve PUP list. He can't play until October. That's a long-term, more serious injury. Active PUP, as soon as you pass a physical, you're practicing again.
Yeah.
So it's typically, in most cases, a relatively minor injury.
And also, not for nothing.
So we're hoping that's the case with
Landon. We also got a call from Kevin in Hamburg about, hey, it's Hard Knocks. Are they going to give them a couple of days before they show up? They're unloading at St. John Fisher today.
Yeah.
We just saw a thing coming across from Channel 4 here in Buffalo reporting, and they're showing the trucks unloading all the gear for Hard Knocks. Yeah. They're there today.
Yeah.
So I jokingly said, yeah, they're probably already there.
Well, they are.
They are.
So there it is. Got to step aside, take a break here, but more of your questions at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 on this OBL Friday fan mailbag. Any question you got, fire it off at us. May check some of the questions we got in the mailbag on the tweet sheet side as well when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.